Lovey, and you're listening to Inspirational Indie Authors. Every week, I feature a member of the Alliance of Independent Authors to find out what inspires them and how they are an inspiration to other authors. My guest this week is Alice McVeigh, who also goes by the pen name Spalding Taylor when she writes science fiction. But those two names are only two aspects of a multidimensional talent. She's a ghostwriter, an editor, and a performer whose voice has peaks and valleys like that of a musician. In fact, the music you hear right now is Alice McVeigh playing the cello. I'll let Alice begin to talk about her journey.
Right, well, I'm Alice McVeigh. I'm a kind of divided person in every sense. I've always felt like an outsider because I grew up in Southeast Asia as a diplomatic American brat. And then I felt as if I was an outsider because, of course, I wasn't part of Burmese society or Singaporean society. We were separate. And then I came back to America and I didn't fit in. So I felt like I was an outsider as an American in America when I was 13. And then I felt a bit of an outsider when I came to London to study the cello with Jacqueline Dupré, because of course I was American. And even though the language is the same, the culture is entirely different. And I've stayed here and I've always been regarded as an outsider because of course I am. And my accent's in the middle of the ocean. So Americans say, God, you sound so British. Oh, no, they don't. They say, oh, my God, you sound so British. And then the British say, oh, dear, you sound so terribly American. And I get accused of being South African for some reason quite a lot. So I've always been stuck in the middle of the ocean, metaphorically speaking.
This feeling of always being an outsider began for Alice at a very young age.
I don't remember anything about Seoul. I was born in Seoul. I left before I was two, but it does confuse a lot of authorities when they say, where were you born? And they assume that's your nationality. And don't get me started on the U.S. tax service. So anyway, basically, I was born in Seoul and my father was a diplomat, as I say. And he went to a reception the next night. And this guy said, I want to congratulate Jack Taylor. He's a biographer, my father. I want to congratulate Jack Taylor on the birth of his daughter last night. And this guy across the table leans over and he says, too bad, too bad. The reason, of course, was the daughter was not reckoned, well, probably still isn't. I'm not an expert on Seoul, very high status. And obviously my father would have been hoping for a boy. And this is my beginning of life. I got a bad review. Anyway, so we lived in other places, which I do remember. My first memory was in Bangkok and I loved Bangkok. For various reasons, which I won't bore you with. But my very first memory, I was four, was I was riding my tricycle down the drive. I had a blue tricycle and I loved it. And I was riding it down the drive feeling happy as a clam. And I ran into a giant python. And it just goes to prove that fear of reptiles is innate because nobody had ever told me they were scary. But I jumped off my tricycle and ran screaming back into the house. And of course, I feel sad for the python now because the servants went out and killed it. But that was my very first memory. So it's a little bit traumatic. But no, we loved Bangkok. And even more, I say we, because I was very much almost like twins, my sister and me, because she's only 1 year younger than I am and always has been, obviously. And so we've been joined at the hip and we adored Singapore. Singapore was so fun. Singapore American school was beyond fun. And we had servants and we had a swimming pool. We had everything. We had no television, but no, there wasn't any TV to watch. So we read. We read from, probably not an extremely early age, but we read from an early age and we never stopped reading. My sister and I read everything. And I began from a very early age to tell her stories.
But at the age of 13, her idyllic childhood abruptly came to an end when her family moved to the United States and she was thrust into American teenage life.
It was horrific, Howard. It was just horrific. That was one of the crises of my life. I dreaded it because I'd read a lot about American sort of high schools and intermediate schools and it did not appeal to me. I was a very bookish child. And even though apparently outgoing, and I always had a lot of friends, I had a very strong, passionate private life. And I just felt as if I was going to be exposed in some way as the outsider I had always felt that I was. And sure enough, this happened. I was very badly bullied. Everybody seemed to recognize without even being told that I was somehow in from a different culture, even though he's been brought up as an American. And in fact, my grandfather was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I mean, we're, and my, on the other side, they get back to the Mayflower. I mean, we're proper Americans. But I never felt like that. I felt sort of as if Asia had changed me and as if I didn't quite belong. And it was all really difficult. And I think that's one of the reasons why I turned to the cello. I fell in love with the cello.
The cello, Alice said, was her shelter, her salvation. And it got her through the pain of high school and adolescence. After graduation, she went to London to study and play the cello full-time. There, she also met the man who would become her husband. And from there, Alice embarked on an adventure that took her from playing in orchestras to a big break in the writing world. Well, Alice tells the story best.
So then I married my husband. Yes, my husband, he's a professor at the University of London, and he was when I met him. And basically, we were going out together for about 6 months when my visa ran out. And I got this rude letter saying, come down, we're about to deport you. And so Simon came down with me to the immigration office, and they said, right, you've overstayed your visa. And if you're not married in the next 4 weeks, we're going to deport you. So I had about 2 seconds to decide my immediate fate. So Simon turned to me and said, should we get married then? And I said, okay. And I'm still married all these years later. So then I started trying to make music, to make money as a cellist, and it was really hard. I had a lot of difficulties because the cello has always appealed to British musicians. There's something in the sound that appeals to them, also the viola. There's so many wonderful violas and cellos. And I even had one young man come up to me, I won't name him, he's still alive, older than me, but not, you know, maybe 15 years older than me. He said, go back to fucking America, why don't you? We don't have to work for the cellos we've got here. And I just felt in some ways as if I was just pummeling against this wall. But I did have successes. I had wonderful successes that kept me going. And I played with the BBC Symphony. I played with the Royal Philharmonic. But anyway, what happened to me in terms of writing was I was playing with about 4 different orchestras. And I began to feel as if I had to write about them. I never told anybody in the orchestras this, or else I'd probably have got rubbed out. But anyway, I wrote short stories based upon the amazing, fascinating characters that I got to know on these tours of Asia and America and other places. And I just think musicians are just very, well, everybody's fascinating, but musicians are somehow more out there than other people. And they wear their hearts more on their sleeves quite often. And so I wrote a series of short stories and I sent them off to an agent. And she said, I think this could be a novel, but I can't sell short stories. So I had to weave the short stories together. I had to fasten them together and make a novel out of it. And I got this amazing agent. She said a Booker Prize winner. I won't name her because she dumped me. But anyway, she was my agent. She sold me, she got me a two-book contract with a major publisher. And I was so overwhelmed. I never thought I would ever do anything serious with writing. I just made over my whole life to the cello, and that was my life. But somehow writing just came in and sort of knocked me over. And then I was very divided. And I think that was one of the reasons why the thing slightly, I got great reviews and I sold the film rights and so forth. And the first novel did really well because everybody was going, oh, you know, The Secret Life of an Orchestra, fantastic. The second book was a sequel. And people sort of thought, well, we've been there, done that. And it didn't go so high on the bestseller list. And my publisher didn't accept my third novel, rightly, I believe, because I think by that point, I was not thinking originally, and I was beginning to panic. I didn't even want to submit the third one, but my agent believed I should. They expect you to keep submitting. And so basically, when I lost the major publisher, Big Five publisher, I lost my agent, and I had a kind of mini breakdown, probably at almost as bad as when I was 13. So basically, I decided I was just unable to deal with this kind of pressure. It wasn't good for my mental health, wasn't good for my stability that factor. And I wasn't playing cello very well either, for obvious reasons. So I thought, I'm just going to give it a miss. I'm not going to, I've had the best chance you could have. There's so many self-published writers go, if only a big five agent, if only a big five publisher had taken me on, I could have scaled the heights and I could, well, they could well be right. It would not amaze me at all, especially some of my friends. But I was phenomenally lucky. First crack out of the box, third agent I approached accepted me. I had everything in my favor and I still felt I'd screwed up.
To lessen the blow, Alice threw herself back into playing the cello and through in vitro fertilization, raising a daughter. And she became a ghostwriter for about 10 years. Alice compared helping other people's work to the mentoring she received as a cello player. Also, there's something about her childhood as an outsider that prepared her to take on other identities.
I find it freeing. I find it freeing. And the reason I find it freeing is because I'm writing not as myself. And that is part of the reason why in this new book of mine, Last Star Standing, I'm writing as Spalding Taylor. That somehow freed me to think I'm writing in a genre I've never written in before. I have no background in. I mean, talk about complete arrogance, but I'm hiding behind the fact that I'm using another name. Well, it's still my name, still my middle name. But anyway, never mind. So, you know, basically I'm hiding behind that. It gave me this freedom to just go wherever I wanted to go. And I feel that when I'm transplanting myself into someone else's life or story. And I feel it's almost like being a cellist, because a cellist trains really hard to express him or herself or themselves as fully and individually as they can. And then, you know what happens? Them, Howard, you won't believe this, but what happens to them is they get put in an orchestra and they do exactly what the conductor tells them to do. All of that autonomy is taken away from them. They are deprived of it. I think writing is, if you're doing ghost writing, it's very like being in an orchestra, because you're following what's set in front of you and giving your own individuality to it, but you're not in control. Whereas if you're writing for yourself as a novelist, you are the conductor and the composer rolled into one. You are basically God. And that's why so many people enjoy it, is because in life, we don't often feel as if we're in perfect control of everything, but you are when you're writing. So it's a release for the orchestral musician to feel as if they're in control of their own little universe.
What brought her back to her own work was something strange that happened while she was meditating.
And I had a vision. And this had never happened to me before. I'd had all kinds of insights and often colors, but I actually saw myself on the lip of Earth looking down a metal shaft into a prison. And there is a metallic kind of prison. And there was a young man tied to a chair, a metal chair, inside this prison. And this person, this character came to me and, you know, I suddenly felt I knew him and he wouldn't leave me alone. He bothered me, he stalked me. He just drove me crazy. He'd wake me up in the middle of the night and go, you haven't written about me yet. And I would have done instantly, because I think his character is actually very appealing, except for the fact that I was convinced somehow that this was in the future, that this was science fiction. And I'm here to tell you, I know absolutely nothing about science fiction. And that's partly what really upset this book, because I decided, being arrogant once I'd written it, once he forced me to write it, Aidan forced me to write it. And I told my husband, this is the dumbest thing I've ever done. But I was pleased with it. And so I sent it off to all these starry agents thinking, here's where I get lucky again. And I didn't. And the reason I didn't, I'm sure now, was because I didn't know anything about the genre. I was flying blind. And I couldn't understand how, you know, I didn't have another big publisher. Anyway, I was very fortunate in getting a feisty indie publisher called Unbound. And Unbound had this amazing, well, they've got several amazing people working for them, but one of them is Sam Boyce, who's the most amazing developmental editor. I was really annoyed when they said, we always have people go through a developmental editor. I'd never heard that before. Orion had just published my books as they were. But the point is, this editor saved my bacon, because she sat me down and she said, Alice, this is wrong. This doesn't work. That is wrong for the what you're trying to do here. This is not science fiction. You know, you really are mixing your genres here. It's not going to sell. You're not going to be happy. You're not going to get the reviews you're used to. You've got to rethink. I just burst into tears. It was like, you know, the rejection all over again when I was dumped by my agent. But then I thought, because I'm much stronger now, I thought, this woman is right, and I was completely wrong. And it took me a long time to do the rewrites, took me a long time to do the rethinks. But every single step of the way, I felt, this is working, this is working.
What was working is her latest book called Last Star Standing, released under her pen name, Spalding Taylor.
Spalding Taylor, it's a little complicated. In one respect, it's not very polite to your sex, but I'll be honest, I'm being completely honest here from start to finish. I have heard, in fact, I've more than heard, there's been some research on this, that science fiction fans who are male are not very keen on female writers. You know, a Spalding could be anything. So that appealed to me. But also, as you've noticed, I like hiding. I don't mind being a ghost because I enjoy being ghostly. I like wriggling in and out of truth and reality. And that's what being a fiction writer is kind of about. So I enjoyed the freedom that having a pen name gave me. And the third reason was, and I was advised about this by several people, my other books were kind of contemporary literary fiction. And I may go back to that. And I'd like Alice McVeigh to be separate from Spalding Taylor, because who knows whether the two groups of readers might coalesce. They will overlap, but how much they overlap, I don't know.
From her childhood in Asia to her adolescence in America to her roles as cellist, ghostwriter, editor, and novelist, Alice McVeigh has learned how to adopt different voices for different roles.
If somebody invites you to play concerto, you've got to step up and throw yourself all over the stage, like my ex-teacher Dupre. You need to own the stage. But if you're sitting 10th cellist in the BBC Symphony Orchestra, that is completely out of place. Instead, you need to sublimate your sound to blend with all the other cellos, to be a team player. And I think, ideally, a really good... And the same thing with writing. If you're writing a novel, you get to play God. But if you're ghost writing, you get to play ghost. You get to feel your way often into someone else's life, if it's a memoir. And, or if it isn't, like I did a fantasy novel recently, a really good young adult fantasy novel, you get to feel your way into that author's world. And that's very fun. But you don't get to impose Alice McVeigh in there. Instead, the less of Alice McVeigh, the better. Or you want to take on the protective, chameleon-like coloration of the person that you're helping.
You've been listening to Inspirational Indie Authors. I'm Howard Lovey. If you are a member of the Alliance of Independent Authors and would like to be considered for the show, please write to me at howard@alliance-independent-authors.org and tell me what inspires you and how you can inspire other authors. If you enjoy this podcast, please tap on your favorite podcast app and give us a review. That will help others discover the family of Allied Podcasts. As always, find more author advice, tips, and tools at our self-publishing advice center, selfpublishingadvice.org. And if you haven't already, we invite you to join our organization and become a self-publishing ally. You can do that at alliance-independent-authors.org.